Today on Snail Trail 4x4, some tokens were found.
Snail Trail 4x4 is brought to you by Bestline Racing. Bestline Racing has a complete lineup of performance additives for your engine's needs. From our oil additives to our fuel treatments, we have you covered for your hobby, tow rig, race car, or your daily driver. Check the show notes for your Snail Trail 4x4 discount at bestlineracing.com.
Welcome one, welcome all to the Snail Trail 4x4 podcast. If you like going off-roading in Toyotas, wrenching on Toyotas, camping in Toyotas, and maybe even poking a little bit of fun at Toyotas, and of course, hearing about how awesome burying Toyotas is, then this is the podcast for you. That's right, ladies and germs, my name is Tyler, also known as Toyota Tyler. And joining me on this 169th episode of the Snail Trail 4x4 podcast, which is the fastest growing off-road Toyota podcast in Sacramento, California, is the one and only Mr. Jim. Jim, how are you?
I'm doing good, Tyler. Thanks for asking. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well.
Nice.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good day, man.
It is.
Yeah.
It's quite funny. I was thinking about it earlier today that in my household, I'm the only one that's not in pain.
Oh no. Uh-oh.
Yeah, the assistant has a neck spasm, neck soreness, neck pain kind of thing going on.
Okay.
For no random reason, you know, or no apparent reason, I guess.
Yeah.
She's just this super sore, tight muscle.
Is she stressed out with stuff?
No, or? I don't, maybe. Mm-hmm. But like every 5 to 10 minutes, she's like, can you give me a massage? You know, I'm like, my thumbs hurt. You know?
Yeah.
And then her daughter, the assistant's assistant, we still need to give her a better name. That one's too long. her daughter crashed on her bike.
Oh no.
Yeah, just wasn't
Did she crash into a rose bush?
No.
Because I did that when I was little. That sucked.
her and her friend, a neighbor friend, were riding around in this cul-de-sac and there was a few puddles.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just bombing through puddles, apparently. I wasn't there. And she just wasn't paying attention or something and hit the puddle and it, like, how it slows you down.
Okay.
And so she must have hit it with a little bit of speed.
Okay.
But it wasn't a very deep puddle. So I don't know exactly what happened, but hit this puddle. And so the assistant thinks that it slowed her down and so much that she panicked and lost control and flew over the handlebars.
OTB.
Yeah. And faced right into the concrete.
Oh,
yeah, faced it. And so she's got a big old puffy lip, like her on the inside of her lip. You can see where the teeth like went into her lip and
nice.
Has a scratch on her outside of her lip and her chin. And that's it. I'm like, how are your hands? She's like, fine. How are your elbows? Fine. How is, you know, your shoulder? Fine. Knees? Fine. You know,
well, like she broke her fall with her face.
Yeah, exactly. Come on. Like, girl, you need to learn how to fall. So, yeah. So she was a funny 7-year-old is all concerned about going to school and having kids make fun of her because she crashed. I'm like, honey, you're gonna wear a mask.
Yeah.
Like, nobody's gonna see your face.
Yeah.
She's like, oh yeah.
Nice.
So that was so I've been sort of playing like a doctor dad in a way, you know, like trying to help one and trying to fix the other. And yeah, it was fun to come home. I was cruising home and I got the call from the assistant. She was like, where are you? I'm like, I'm on my way. She's like, can you get here quick? I'm like,
I'll let you borrow the Theragun.
Yeah.
That thing works awesome.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It's that black case right over there.
All right.
So
I don't know what that is, but I'll borrow it.
It works great for neck and like shoulder massages or any deep tissue massage.
Oh, so, yeah. Sweet. Yeah. I'll gladly accept that.
There you go.
It'll save my thumbs.
Yeah.
So anyways, how are things in this homestead?
Pretty good.
Yep.
Yeah. Things are just cranking right along. We had a great Valentine's Day, just kind of relaxing. And, so it was nice just kind of sit back and relax for a day and kind of force myself to stop working for a day.
Right. It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like, I don't know what to do. And I ended up working anyways for a lot of it, but mainly just like on the computer stuff.
Sure.
But yeah, the warehouse
is coming along. So I went and got found an auction with some cheap office chairs, essentially, that we can throw in the warehouse and beat up and tear up and not have to worry about too much. So got a couple of those, a couple of things for the lobby, some like lobby furniture things. And then there's an auction for pallet racking that I'm looking at. That's starting in 5 minutes here.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I'll have 2 days to bid on it and see what we can do. But I'm going to need your help to go get it.
Why?
Because it has to be fully disassembled and it's bolted into concrete outdoors.
Got it. Okay.
So I'm going to need to, and it says whoever wins is fully responsible for disassembly and getting it out of there. I was like,
How much is there? Because I might be interested in buying more pallet racking.
This one is 12 foot uprights.
Okay.
And there's 4 uprights with some 6 foot beams and 15 foot beams. So it can either be done with one section of 6 foot and 3 sections of 15 foot, or I think 2 sections of 6, 2 of 15, something like that.
Got it.
Yeah.
So how many shelves per section?
3 shelves, I believe.
Got it.
3 or 4.
So when you say there's 4 uprights, that's not one per corner. That's each end of an upright.
Correct.
So you can make 3 sections total.
Correct. 3 sections, yeah.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's that one. But the big one I'm waiting for at the end of the month has a lot more pallet racking.
Oh, nice.
So,
okay. Yeah, because I'm considering putting a section or two out back behind the shop.
Oh, okay.
Outside.
Yeah.
To just store things that I'm not too concerned about weather-wise, or figure out
like a Corey's
way
axle.
Yep. or figure out a way to kind of make it a little bit more weatherproof.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, I think it'd be nice to have more storage, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Or I need to.
You just need a bigger shop.
I'd need a bigger shop, or I just need to purge again.
Yeah.
Yeah. One or the other. I was gonna say I had an interesting Valentine's Day because I was quarantining. For a while after KOH.
Yeah.
And then I went on, got my my COVID check and became negative, right? And so I was able to go out. But I couldn't go. I got tested on Saturday. And that before that, I had no time to prep for Valentine's Day. And on that Saturday, I came and recorded here. And then I immediately went to hang out with the assistant and had, you know, and hung out all night long with them. And had no, and so Valentine's Day comes around and I'm like, okay, I need to go shopping. And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, I couldn't go out and do anything. And I couldn't, you know, and we had already had some plans for the morning. And it was like in the afternoon, I'm like, okay, I need to go buy your guys' gifts. Like, you got to let me go.
Yeah.
You know, like I haven't had time to do any of this.
Yeah.
Or been able to. It's like, I mean, maybe I could have done some Amazon shopping if I was ahead forward thinking, but you know. That didn't happen.
No. Forward thinking is overrated for sure. I did notice. So speaking of just interesting COVID topics, I guess.
Okay.
I ran into a problem the other day that I never realized would really be a problem. So I had to go out to the Bay Area yesterday to get the auction stuff and see some of my day job accounts. And they were all closed because, you know, hashtag President's Day and me not realizing.
Sure.
So, but I had to pee really, really bad. And so I was trying to find a public restroom.
Yeah.
And I could not find one.
I had this same
open
problem.
Available. I was like, what do I do? I got a freaking pee. What do I? Yeah. And so I was like, oh my God.
I defecated in public because I had that problem.
Right? I just kind of found a little frontage road and pulled off and opened up the doors on the F-150. Yep. And
I was like, did the same thing.
I was like, I have no other choice. Yeah. What if I have no other. I was like, geez.
I pulled into a McDonald's, you know, figuring, okay, they're at least have their lobby open probably for serving. Nope.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh gosh.
Yeah. I went to 3 restaurants, 2 Starbucks and 2 grocery stores and nobody had their restrooms open for public use. And I was like, I can't hold it anymore. I can't keep going around to these places.
You know, and I didn't think of it at the time, but you know where I have had some luck is, gas stations.
A gas station.
Yeah.
See, I went to the one gas station in between those. I was like, they gotta have it. And I was like, okay, what's a bigger place? And so I went to grocery stores, and nobody was letting. I was like, okay, I'm done trying this.
Yeah, I think a good rule of thumb, now that I'm thinking about it, and I wasn't, you know, like so stressed at that time, is probably finding more of like a small location, not a like a big chain, not like a Starbucks or not a McDonald's.
Yeah, maybe,
because they're probably like, you know, if you find like a little mom and pop shop, they're probably open like as much as they possibly can because they need to survive.
Yeah,
so
that's true. Maybe I should have gone the other route and found a little hole in the wall place and been like, hey, I will buy something. Yeah. I will give you $10, let me use your restroom. Exactly. Yeah. Anyway, so I thought that was really interesting. I was like, man, I never would have thought this would be a problem before.
I agree. Yeah.
So, yeah, I would just like to, you know, point it out that if you're caught doing that, you get a nice little anklet that tells you where you are at all times. So,
yeah, just don't do it near a school.
Yeah, right.
All right, let's make sure that we can thank all those people that did go to school and have big boy jobs and can afford to pay us some money.
Yeah, like Matthew. Matthew is our newest patron here. So, Matthew Faced. Like a face with a T on the end.
Yeah, I have a really good friend from college, Matt Faust, and first I thought this was him. I was like, whoa, no way. And then I learned how to read again and found out that it's not Faust, it's Faced.
Nice.
So thanks, Faced. Matt. I appreciate it.
Yep, so he's signed up in that giveaway tier, so he got entered for this month's giveaway, which is...
We've got the Pitbull plier set that comes with two channel locks, a lineman plier, some snips, needle nose, and some regular pliers. Mm-hmm. Along also in there, we're giving away the hood latch with wing light, which we've talked about a bunch in the past. And something I'm going to throw in there that I haven't told Tyler about yet, and I have no idea what the price is, but I think he would agree with me that we
is it a 94 4Runner?
No.
Okay, good, because I would have some
some rebuttals. The value down. Of this down is the adjustable wrench with pass-through on the handle. Also the one that you can completely unwind the adjustable wrench and flip that tongue over, and it becomes a pipe wrench. We have
nice.
A few extra of those in the Snail Trail shop, so I figured we could add one of those to this list because we do love that product so
That's
much.
A really cool one.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Those are like $30. So I think this brings it up to about $250, and we'll have more info as we continue down this month for getting that up to $300 value.
Cool. Awesome. We had a couple of pucks found.
We did.
Some exciting. Of the tokens.
Yeah. One of our brand new patrons.
I
mean, I think we announced his name last week.
I think so, yeah.
And I'm not going to try to announce it again because I think we got it right on like the 12th try.
Yeah, something like that.
But Chris found it, and one of the Mount Diablo ones. So did you release? I know that you hid two on Mount Diablo. Did you only release one?
I did only release one. I was waiting for it to be found before I released the second one. So the second one is now released as well.
Excellent. And then one of the ones that you hid on Heartless Peak was
up
found.
Up near Uncle Tom's cabin.
Right.
So my original plan was to hide it at Uncle Tom's. And they were closed Wednesday. Apparently, they're not open on Wednesdays. So I was like, okay. So I just kind of continued on up Heartless Peak, and we'll talk about that in this episode here. But I hit it up there.
Yeah.
And he found it like 3 days later, 4 days later, something like that.
And it sounds like we've had a patron try to find the very first puck that we hid. And it's a doozy. They said that they searched for about an hour trying to find it. They found a geocache, and so they were kind of concerned that somebody might have taken the puck and not the geocache.
Yeah.
But I would be very shocked if somebody actually finds this one.
Yeah.
This one's hidden really good.
Yeah, I was looking to see because you've hidden it very well. And we've talked about it a couple times.
Yes.
And so I was trying to see, you showed me a picture of the rock pile that it's in, and I thought you had texted it to me. Mm-hmm. So I was going to send it and post that picture on the Facebook page just to give an idea of which rock pile it's in. I still don't even know if you're you're going to find it knowing which rock pile it's in.
Yeah.
But, and so I was looking for it and I was like, oh, I don't see it. And so I told him, I was like, you're going to have to ask Jim, bribe Jimmy to see if you can get that picture now.
Exactly. I might ask for like 1/13th of your grand prize if you
want. Right.
But yeah, so it's fun to see these things, out in the wild and fun to, have people actually going and grabbing them. So
yeah,
that's really cool. I do regret not hiding any down at KOH.
Yeah.
It just completely skipped my mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, that just means we'll have to make another trip down there now.
Actually, that we were talking about that. Samurai James and I were, we want to go down there and wheel when there's not like 40,000, 50,000 people down there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we might find a 3-day weekend sometime and try to arrange a time with like Wheeling Wine and Whiskey.
Yeah.
You know, us and a few friends to go down there and play.
Cool. Yeah. I'd be very interested in that.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. That would be cool. I don't know. We'd probably be looking at here in the near future, before summer.
Yeah.
Right. Or, in the fall.
Okay, cool.
Because you don't go out there in the summer. It's just way too hot.
Yeah, it is pretty hot, but I have air conditioning, so it doesn't matter to me.
Yeah.
I can go out whenever, and tinted windows.
There you go.
So I might be out there in the summer.
Right.
So, cause no one else will be.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's still not fun to, you're just going to be sitting in your cab the whole entire time and sleeping in your cab with your engine on and, you know, cause it's like 140 at night.
No way. It drops a lot at night.
Probably does. Probably gets pretty cold actually in the middle of summer.
I actually had, I posted a post on Instagram about the snow wheeling. I was like, I don't understand why everybody's down in the desert when you have such good snow available here for snow wheeling. Sure. Yeah. I was like, I don't get it. And people are like, well, you're much less likely to die if you get stuck in the desert. And I was like, I would disagree.
Not a lot of water available in the desert.
Yeah, that with the extreme fluctuating temperatures, at least if you get stuck in the snow, hopefully you knew you were going to the snow. And so you have the clothing to be warm 100% of the time in the snow. Whereas like in the desert, you've got to pack cold weather and hot weather gear.
Mm-hmm.
So I would disagree with that argument.
Yeah, I think it's... I would probably disagree as well. I mean, I think it's harder to survive in the desert than it would be in a snowy condition.
Mm-hmm.
The hard part about snow is trying to stay warm. But even in the desert, it gets pretty cold at night and you have to concern yourself with warmth.
Yeah.
So, during the day,
it's also harder if you don't have a chainsaw. Even with a chainsaw, it's harder to find enough firewood to keep like a fire going indefinitely in the desert too, compared to snow up in the mountains
and water in the desert. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could probably, I forgot what those things are called when you just dig a hole and solar stills.
Yep.
Then I forgot what they're called. You know, you can do that, but then you're even stuck in one place, you know, not moving. But yeah, I mean, if you do crash and burn, you know, out in the desert, it's not hard to get back to Johnson Valley where it's
true.
People, but
yeah.
Anyways, shall we move on to today's topic?
Yeah.
I mean, here we are at almost 15 minutes in.
I did have a couple of updates from feedback that have come in since the previous couple of episodes. One was some corrections to the previous episode that we talked about the what we would guess would be the best 4600 class vehicle, right? Okay. Platform for 4600 class racing at Ultra 4. And we said that monotube shocks do not have reservoirs. And apparently that is false.
Okay.
Add
reservoirs to monotubes? Is that what they...
I think what they're saying is that all monotubes have a reservoir to hold oil in. And I'm like, yes, that's not, I don't think that's what we meant though.
Right.
So any remote reservoir, so you can have more oil in the shocks to keep them cooler through high speed usage and... fast cycling of the shock.
Right.
That's what we're talking about.
Yeah. So. And the rules state that you can't have a reservoir.
Correct. Right. Like a
external,
remote. An external reservoir, piggyback or remote, anything. It has to be a single monotube shock.
Exactly.
Yes. So that's what we meant there. Sorry if we didn't clarify that well enough for all you sticklers out there. The other feedback was that XJs do not come with coiled rear ends. Coil and sprung rear ends.
They're leaf sprung,
apparently, which I totally would have bet large money that they were coil sprung in the rear.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I wonder if there's okay.
a year that, because an XJ drove past me today on the way down here, and I was like, oh, coils all around.
That's kind of, I'm like, I could have sworn there were coils all around, but he is claiming. Like
older years had leaf rears, maybe. And, you know, newer years had, you know, because, I mean, XJs yeah. Are they still made today? You know, like
XJs are not made. Yeah, they stopped early 2000s.
Did they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, they moved on to the regular Cherokee and the Trailhawks editions and all that. Because
they even went, during those early 2000s, they went back to like the classic. You mm-hmm. know, they had the classic and the classic sport. You mm-hmm. know, and I wonder, like, there's a good variety of options on some of those. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. so that was the other one, was that XJs apparently are leaf sprung in the rear, which I'm hesitant to back him on that, but that's what he's claiming, so I'll put it out there for him.
All right.
And then he had one other update here. One other, not an update.
Clarification.
Oh, no, that was it. So just the reservoirs on the monotubes. Oh, and then he wanted to add in that he thinks that a third gen 4Runner would be the best build because you can do a really gnarly custom long travel front on it, mm-hmm. a custom 4-link rear, and a supercharged 3.4.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
That's what I was saying. I think... sorry.
You okay there? Did you swallow a bug?
Still learning to swallow.
Learning how to talk still.
On my post on Instagram for the episode, I had mm-hmm. a lot of good people bringing up some interesting ideas from a Scout 800, which I didn't think about. Those are cool because they're smaller than a Scout 2.
Okay. Nice.
And so they're pretty neat. But I think they're still leaf sprung all around. But they did come in some bigger engine sizes. Also, one that I don't know. I can't recall if we talked about it or not, but the first like gen Broncos mm-hmm. are definitely a cool idea. They did come with some coils in them, and they had some gnarly V8s.
Yeah.
Also, a fun fact or fun thing was that the fourth gen 4Runner that raced commented on my post.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, and they said that they think their platform's the best because it has really good options of suspension and the V8 inside.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I commented back to him and I said, we talked about you. We think that you do have an excellent platform. We just were concerned about the weight and the length of your vehicle.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Marlin long travel up front's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the 4-link that you can do in the back is great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the V8's a great thing. And I said, but Justin Reese proves that you don't need a V8 to actually finish this race.
Yeah.
You know, he's doing
half the cylinders.
Might help.
It and
might
he's won be, it.
Yeah, yeah. A good thing to have. But, you know, a 4-banger is doing it. So,
yeah.
You know, a 4-banger to V6, a V6 supercharged, turboed somewhere in there. V8s are all, you know, good to have, but you don't absolutely need it.
Yes, 100%. And so it's like, yeah, what is, because there's, and I wanted to clarify this because we talked about some other options and I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be like, oh, what, you didn't mention this, you didn't mention that.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree there's a ton of 4,600 options that can finish, but really we're asking what is the recipe to win it and win it consistently.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, I think any 4,600 class you can finish if you build it the right. I mean, especially being able to take and put whatever axles you want under a vehicle. I think there's a lot of options out there that can finish the 4,600 race.
Yeah.
And, but win it consistently. And somebody, that's what we're looking at.
Somebody just brought up to us just before we started recording this mm-hmm. podcast, since we're talking about it, something we didn't talk about or think about was portal axles.
Yeah, can portal boxes, yeah.
Can you imagine putting some like Jesse Haynes fab portals mm-hmm. underneath one of your rigs?
Yeah.
Just to give it a little bit more ground clearance?
Yeah, I mean, you take...
If you're limited to 35s, this automatically raises your pumpkin up.
Mm-hmm.
How cool would that be?
That'd be freaking awesome. You can take a longer wheelbase vehicle, so you have a lot of stability out in the desert going fast,
mm-hmm.
and still get the ground clearance for the rocks
yeah.
by running the portals on.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure you can run portals in 4,600 because that's part of your axle setup. Essentially,
yeah, you can swap the axles out.
Mm-hmm.
The question would be, how well do they do at high speeds for desert stuff?
Correct. That's the question.
I'm not sure, because they're usually geared so low. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could probably change the gearing in his. He's ran that class or the 4500 class in a Jeep. And so I'd be curious to see if he was running his portals on that, on those rigs. I'm not sure if he was.
Yeah. Somebody else mentioned there's actually a thread on irate 4x4.
Sherpa.
Sherpa mentioned it.
Sherpa told us, yeah.
There's a thread on irate 4x4 that asks this almost the exact same question. The question is more of what's the best 4500 or 4600 class? And then a lot of the thread devolves into, well, you need to pick between 45 and 4600 instead of talking about what would be the best options.
Yeah.
But
which one are you going to run? Then we'll tell you.
Exactly.
We'll discuss what's the best one.
Yeah. But the it seems like from the first few posts before it really starts devolving, it seems like people are on the same ideas that we were thinking. XJ with a 4.0 liter in it, or an 85 Toyota 4Runner extra cab pickup. Somebody also said that for the stock class, the 4600, XJs, ZJs, WJs, and LJs consistently do a pretty good track, have a good track record historically through that race, the 4600 sure. class. So yeah. Sounds like we were kind of on the right path track. But I'm still curious, what else is there, anything that just people haven't looked into yet?
Yeah,
that could do it.
Yeah, I think that, you know, one of the things that I noticed was that, you know, obviously you and I were talking a lot of Toyota, and people were commenting about other platforms. And mm-hmm. the thing is, we know Toyotas mm-hmm. pretty well, mm-hmm. and we don't know a lot of other platforms as in depth.
Yeah.
Right. And that's really what I'm curious about is, like, okay, what did we miss in another model or another brand uh-huh. that, you know, I wasn't thinking about, because mm-hmm. I don't know that much about those.
Yeah.
I'm not as in depth or knowledgeable about some of those things.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. And that's why we wanted to talk about it. And that's why we brought it up. And that's why we did an episode on it last week.
And that's why we're bringing it up again.
So that's just a fun topic that we wanted to cover. And I would also like to point out that Wheeling Wine and Whiskey.
Yes.
They, in one of their latest episodes, they went over like all the winners of each class, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They completely skipped the 4600 class.
Why do you think that might be?
I think it might have something to do with the superior Toyota platform winning it.
Possibly.
And their butt hurt
yes.
about it.
And
so
they don't want to admit how great they are.
Exactly.
I know.
So
I didn't catch that on until you pointed it out to me. So that's pretty funny.
I didn't nice even figure it out. It was Evan. We should thank Evan for that one.
Nice job, Chris and Jason. Way to leave off the Toyota winning platform.
It's all right. We know that they're truly jealous about it. So they're closet Toyotas. So, So that's, I think, you know, the other thing that they're really jealous about is that I have bigger tires on smaller axles, and I do just fine until I break my housing. Shh, leave that part out. Yeah. We'll edit that part out. So, I think that does it for all the updates that I had from people, from previous episodes. So
yeah.
Yeah.
We're still trying to reach that 500 mark mm-hmm. of reviews. So please leave us a review. We're trying to get to 500 by the end of the year, which is a big, big push for us. So if you haven't left a review yet, please do so. That really helps us grow in the platform and spread mm-hmm. the word, and, you know, keeps us moving forward, even though we'd be doing it anyway.
So I'm going to put this out there. I'm not committing to it yet, but I have a spare 10,000 pound winch sitting in my garage right now.
Ooh.
That I was going to use as a rear winch for the 4Runner.
Okay.
But since I put my dual batteries under the rear cargo area, I don't really have room for a winch under there anymore. So I'm probably not going to be using that winch anytime in the near future.
Interesting.
So I'm thinking about offering it up as a prize and a raffle drawing for reviews.
That's a fun idea.
Mm-hmm. So, wow. Anyways, just putting that out there. And if you guys think that that's a good idea, then let me know. If I get enough people responding and we see a bunch of reviews. Yeah, in a review. Yeah, leave a review and let me know if you're just trying to win a winch. And if we get enough people kind of mentioning that and pushing that forward, then I'll do it.
So, all right. But so let's get some motivation here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it.
So I think that what we'll do is if we do move that route, it'll be open to anybody who's left a review. So once we hit 500, we'll do the drawing.
Yeah. One in 500 chance.
Mm-hmm. So one in 500 chance at winning a 10,000 pound winch.
Yeah. And if you leave a review under your significant other's platforms, you might have
a two
chance.
In 500. If you leave a review under your buddy's phones, just grab all your buddy's phones and go leave a review under their phones. You'll have a 4 or 5 in 500 chance. Yeah. That's like 1 in 100.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good odds for a 10,000 pound winch. Just saying.
It's shabby.
Yeah. All right.
So speaking of winches.
Yeah.
Did you have to use yours this last weekend?
I did not. Week? Yeah. The last week, yeah. I did not actually. I like my dynamic recovery rope. It's very rare that I will bury myself so bad that I have to use a winch to get out in the snow.
Yeah.
I can usually bury myself just enough to get strapped out just fine with a kinetic strap or a recovery rope, something like that. My dad came up. And we had a lot of snow up in the Sierras here. We've talked about it. I love snow wheeling because I love the challenge of going and almost getting the rig stuck and then seeing how I can get it out unstuck. And so we went up wheeling. And so we were up there 2 days, Tuesday and Wednesday. We came back down each day. So we weren't spending the night or camping or anything.
Got it. Okay.
So 2 day trips, Tuesday, Wednesday, nobody out there.
That's
we had the entire forest to ourselves pretty much both days.
Wow.
It was great. And so we also, because the snow had come down like at 6 feet at a time, it wasn't like layered. So over time, the snow, as a snow storm comes in, it'll give a layer of fresh snow, and that kind of gives you layers to pack in as you're driving on. This didn't have that.
Okay.
So you're just kind of going along, and once you kind of broke through the top layer of crust, you just sink.
Right.
That means that a lot of people had not gone and cleared the normal trails yet. So, which is always fun. It's another point of pride for me to be able to
break the trail,
yeah. Right? And say, I made it the furthest than anybody else has gone so far since the last storm.
Right.
And so we got to do that both days. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, awesome.
But the first day, we went up to Mormon Immigrant Trail.
Okay.
Which I thought, because some buddies of mine had gone up, Brian, the weekend before, and said that they made it almost all the way to Silver Fork, which is pretty high up there. That's up over the highest point. There's a couple of really steep sections, deep sections of snow, and some off-camber turns that are kind of like sweeping turns in deep snow. And that can be pretty challenging to get up to the Silver Fork Road intersection. And I was like, man, okay. So I was thinking, okay, we're going to get up to Silver Fork relatively easily, and then we can just go down Silver Fork to Highway 50. No, the track stopped about 3 to 5 miles before Silver Fork Road.
Okay.
At a place called Alder Road. And it was funny because he said that when he was going up there, he was going up and he got turned around by one of the sheriffs. The sheriff were up there in their Rubicon Jeeps that the Mark Smith Foundation built.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The sheriff was coming down and Brian was going up, and I guess they went to pass each other and they both got stuck and they had to winch. And I guess the sheriff, wasn't used to snow conditions, wasn't used to snow wheeling, but apparently he kind of had a little bit of a freak out and, panicked and yelled at everybody and told everybody that no one's allowed to go any further. And he turned everybody around and made everybody head down the hill.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So he didn't make it quite to Silver Fork.
Safety third.
Exactly. I'm pretty sure I came up because I was following tracks, and I got to the spot where it was just a big messed up clearing where you could tell some people were having issues, and then there were no tracks beyond it. And I was like, oh, that's probably right where this happened.
This is where everybody was turned around.
Yeah. Yep. So we had lunch there. A good buddy of ours came. His name's Phil. He has a Colorado ZR2.
Oh, nice.
So front and rear lockers, but IFS, not a big lift on it. And I was thinking he was going to have troubles as soon as we started hitting deep snow. And he was doing pretty damn well up until we hit the fresh tracks, the fresh powder area there. And then maybe
100 feet, 200 feet down the fresh tracks, he just would high center and turtle the whole time because he just doesn't have the ground clearance like we do. And so we ended up having lunch there for about 2 hours, just hanging out with my dad, me, Phil, and his wife. And my neighbor came along, my old neighbor, Mike.
Oh, really? Cool.
Yeah.
Rode with you?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
And so, yeah, we had a good time and just hung out for a while. And then Phil turned around there after lunch and headed on down the hill. And my dad, me, and Mike ended up continuing on. And maybe, I don't know, 1,000 yards past the lunch spot, my dad started having issues.
Uh-oh.
And I'm like, he shouldn't be having issues. His truck, yeah. I mean, granted, he's a little heavier than me, maybe 500 to 700 pounds heavier than Kermit is. But he shouldn't be having that big of issues. He, technically, his tires are wider. He has internal bead locks, so he's not going to be burping. Mm-hmm. Ah. He's got the old Staun internal bead lock tubes.
I've been thinking about getting those for Bobcat.
They're fantastic.
Yeah.
They're just getting harder to find.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a little bit of a pain in the ass to install, but once they're in there, they're great.
Yeah. They're also DOT approved.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Which is neat.
Yeah. And they're better than regular bead locks because they hold both of your beads on your front and your rear, rather than, you know, regular bead locks.
Yep.
So, they're great. I've looked into them for a while in the past and I, just really couldn't find a good source for them that had good reviews because Staun stopped producing them. And so you had to find some other people and then the other people, the reviews on them were all people were saying they were having issues with them. So, anyways, he's having some issues. I'm like, what is going on? Why is he just like kept getting sucked into the snow banks rather than, staying in my tracks.
Okay.
And, so he was having a lot more issues than he should have. So finally we stopped and I'm like, okay, what's going on? We're looking and his compressor, his ARB, twin ARB is just staying on. And I'm like, you have a leak in your system somewhere. And so I was like, let's shut everything down. And so we found out his rear locker wasn't locking.
Mm.
And so I was like, all right, so you have a leak in your air system. Let's, you know, track it down, find your air leak and see if we can fix it.
Sure.
And so I crawl under the rig and I look and his rear passenger tire is completely flat. Mm. I'm like, that's weird because...
Yeah.
You have dual internal bead locks. And so like I had an issue with one of mine. One of my tires burped air. And so one of my tires was completely flat as well. But, you know, I with snow wheeling, I tend to do that and rock crawling because I go down to such low PSIs and those tires have been used before I got them for however many years. So the beads on them are not the best. And I think that's my main issue is right. that the okay. beads just don't hold onto the rim that well. And so I burped air and had to refill one of my tires, but I was like, he shouldn't be burping air at all. So I was like, what's going on here? And I kind of look and I'm looking at the tire and I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. This is, I just started laughing really hard.
Yeah.
It looked like Freddy Krueger got a hold of his tire and just went to town. There was 7 or 8, like a minimum 6-inch gashes throughout his whole sidewall going around the corner lugs into his tread, like 7 or 8 of them. I was like, what the hell did you do?
I saw your Instagram post with your hand inside the tire.
Yeah.
So what was that? I mean, obviously there was something. He had to have hit something or the tires were old and they were at so low pressure that they were just cracking and busting or I don't know, but like for having that, being messing up a tire that bad.
Yeah.
That's just crazy. What happened?
So I thought that cause he had just gotten a new set of tires like a year ago, four new tires. I was like, why did this happen on a new set of tires?
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, we have a bigger problem here. Let's get the tire off, put the spare on. And then we'll look into your leaking airline. So he pulled the tire off and he goes, now that I think about it, he goes, this is the tire. This is my old spare because he did a trip on Doozy this year. And I guess he ended up, finishing the trail by himself and he got a flat, punctured his sidewall on one of his tires and he swapped it out and put his spare on. So that's the spare that he's had for
8, 9, 10 years sitting on the back of his truck, getting sun rotted and everything. And so running down at 3 to 4 PSI with a 6,000 pound rig in the snow, it just cracked one of the sidewalls. And then once the air was completely deflated out of the tire, it's just completely flat at that point. He's running it, right? Yeah. And it just shredded the tire. I've never seen a tire done like that.
Wow.
It was very impressive. So we got the spare on, no problem. So I was like, okay, now let's figure out what's going on with your airline. And I had him turn on his compressor, and I'm tracing everything. His compressor is like right there above his rear axle, right? It's like right there between the gas tank and the rear axle.
Okay.
So it's really hard to hear where the air is leaking from, any air leaking, because the compressor is so loud. Sure. So I start moving my hand around everything, trying to feel where the hell is air where's coming leaking. Out of. Where's it leaking? I was like, it's a substantial leak for the compressor to all stay on. What the hell is going on? And after a couple minutes, I finally found it. It was on the bulkhead fitting into the axle.
Okay.
For the airline to go into his ARB.
It was getting unscrewed?
No, the line cracked. So whoa. He has the original plastic ARB lines that ARB sends out with all of their locker kits.
Yeah.
And I hate those lines. I've seen them blow. I've seen them crack. I've seen them burst. It's just a hard plastic. And I'm like, on a vehicle that is moving a lot, you don't want hard plastic.
Right.
To make something airtight that will end up breaking over time. It's like the idea of soldering electrical connections, right, on these vehicles. Mm-hmm. So it turns out it had cracked right at the bulkhead fitting, which means, you know, that's a plastic line going into the bulkhead fitting, and it's going to be moving around, and it just moved around and cracked it and pulled the whole thing right off. So,
dang. Okay.
So luckily, since it was right at the bulkhead fitting where it broke, we had enough line.
Yeah, you could cut off an inch or so and reattach it.
Mm-hmm. So we pulled apart his bulkhead fitting and put the line back in and put everything back together, and it worked great from then on out.
Yeah.
So
and you're like, okay, Dad, time for you to get a new line.
Yep. I was like, let's get rid of this stupid
over here.
I wouldn't use Flexzilla for it either because it doesn't like heat.
Oh,
Flexzilla does not like heat. So I would use literally a polyurethane line. It's an internal, I forget what it's called. Anyways, a different line than that. And so I was like, let's get rid of these compression fittings because compressor fittings suck. They're hard to find once you're out on a trail somewhere. Let's swap it over to MPT fittings and a hose barb and hose clamp. It's way simpler, way easier to deal with, and a different airline. And so that's going to be on a next project when we come back and work on his truck.
Okay.
So we had that, and that was really the only issue with that day other than I burped tires twice. So it's really, really, really annoying to burp a tire and then not have your air compressor turning on so you can refill your tires.
Why wasn't your air compressor turning on?
So this is ever since I redid the electrical in this rig, the AGM batteries like to be charged at like almost a full 15 volts, right? Okay. They need to be charged at 14.7, 14.8 volts minimum. Most alternators especially on older vehicles, older-esque vehicles, they're only really putting out like 14 to 14.4 volts. My alternator on the Kermit from the 3.4 swap that's on there, the stock alternator from 3.4 swap, it only puts out like 13.8 to 14.1 volts.
Wow. Okay.
So I've known that I need to upgrade the alternator because it is just killing my AGMs, my dual batteries. And so my combined that with the isolator for the dual battery setup, it kicks on at 13.3, 13.4 volts and kicks off at 12.2. So if the alternator is not on, my accessory, the second battery that I have all my accessories hooked up to, including my air compressor, doesn't get charged.
Lovely. So
it's not only not really getting charged fully, but it's not getting charged fully at all. But when it does get charged, it's only charging like 13.7, 13.8 volts, which is really, really, really bad for AGMs. And I've known that. And so my fix for it was get a Premier power welder, which I did back in November, something like that. And I still haven't installed it. The Premiers, they will at, 500, 700 RPMs, they will ping like 14.8, 15 volts.
So how does the welder fix your alternator problem?
Because the welder comes with a new alternator.
Oh, okay.
So the Premier welders, they come with a new alternator. It's 160, 170 amp alternator. But what it does, it sends the power from the alternator into the welder box. And then you run the power from the welder to the rest of your vehicle. And there's a fancy magical electronics in the blue Premier welder box that bumps up your voltage, your current, your amperage, everything. So I either needed to... Exactly. So the fixes for AGM batteries on rigs is to... You can run a diode setup that plugs into fuse relays and everything. They're usually about $100. You can find them for that bumps up your charging voltage from your alternator to the rest of your vehicle so that the rest of your vehicle runs at 14.8, 15 volts when the alternator is on. The other option is to get an aftermarket alternator and find newer aftermarket alternators. My dad has like a 300 amp alternator on his truck.
Wow.
It was very expensive, he said, but it's well worth it because at 800 RPMs, it puts out 200 amps, something like that. And it keeps everything at like 15 volts. So get an aftermarket alternator or get a Premier power welder, something that will do it automatically. So sure. I already have the Premier. It's sitting in my garage.
Yeah.
So now that it's becoming a big enough issue where my compressor won't stay on because I have it hooked into my accessory switch panel and my accessory switch panel shuts everything off under, I think, a 12 volts. So once it gets to 11.9, shuts everything off, my compressor doesn't want to stay on. It kind of cycles on and off because it's not receiving power.
Got it.
Because the second battery doesn't stay charged.
So time to call Johnny up.
Yep. So I've already called John.
Nice.
And I was like, hey, this is now a top priority. I need to get this done. I can do it myself, but I know you wanted to be kind of involved
you
with it.
Here.
So when do you want to do it? So the end of the month is cool. We're going to get the Premier set up.
Nice.
And Kermit. So that'll be fun. So that was a Tuesday, and that's kind of all the drama that happened Tuesday. We had a great day. We made it all the way to the top of Alder Ridge. And I tried going out. There's a big clearing you can get over to that my ham radio club. That's where they do their field day each year. And if you know what field day is, that's awesome. It's fun. I won't get into it now. But we tried to go over there, and immediately as soon as I got off of the road, I just went and sunk the whole front end of Kermit.
Oh, wow.
And so we just strapped me backwards, and there was no problem getting out of it with a strap. But that was the only strap I needed that day. And then Wednesday, we went up to Uncle Tom's.
Right.
And so Wednesday, we're like, okay, let's go up and see the people at Uncle Tom's, say hi to Teresa, and have a good time. And we got up there, and Uncle Tom's was closed.
Wow.
They were not open. So we turned around and had lunch in the intersection for Wentworth Springs Road and the pull-off for Uncle Tom's.
Okay.
And I knew that...
Where it says Jeepers Welcome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I had lunch there, and then continued on up, and I knew that I had some other buddies that ran that side the weekend prior, and they said they made it to within about 2 miles past Uncle Tom's, and then they turned around and went home. So I knew that we were going to get fresh tracks probably
right
within about 2 miles after Uncle Tom's, and sure enough, we got fresh snow.
Cool.
We ended up getting met. A couple people rolled up on us while we were sitting there at Uncle Tom's, and so Chase and Ken has a two-door JK Sport. So it has limited slips front and rear, right?
Okay.
On 40s, on the 40-inch ProCom tires.
Wow.
And he was running chains on his rear tires.
Ooh.
And I was like, interesting. And I was like, okay, we'll see how this goes.
Yeah.
And then the other guy, Chase, he had a 87, 88 pickup, mini truck. on 38 inch tires, 1550 wides.
Whoa.
And I was like, he's set up for snow. He's going to be good. And they were like, it looked like brand new tires. So,
what tires are that? How do they get that wide?
38 by 1550 by, I think they were 17s. It looked like a Mickey Thompson.
Interesting.
But I didn't look and see what brand it was.
Yeah.
So he did great.
That's super wide.
Yeah. And he's super lightweight. He weighs, I think he said that he weighed his truck and unloaded, he weighs like 3,200 pounds, something like that.
Sounds about
loaded.
Right.
He's like 37, 38. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, we'll let you go first.
Sure.
So, he broke trail most of the time. And then, Ken was behind him, and it was really interesting to watch Ken go because he had an Atlas in it. And so he was geared way down and he was just able to sit there and let the rig crawl, and because he was light enough in a two-door JK, me and him probably weighed about the same, but he was able to get traction and maintain traction for the most part, crawling through stuff. And I was like, that's really interesting to watch. Open.
Yeah.
And so then I was behind him, and then my dad, and we just kind of were cruising right along and letting Chase break trail. There's one section, the last final hill as you're going up Heartless Peak. It was deep snow. I mean, it was up to my hood essentially.
Wow.
And Chase would, you know, break it, and then Ken would kind of pack it in, and then me and my dad would just kind of no problem.
Yeah.
Just walk right through. And so I found out that I was able to put the rig into crawl and just kind of keep right along without ever having to touch the gas, right? At about the same pace that they were breaking trail moving up. And so I was like, I wonder if... And then I eventually got to the point where I was like, I'm just going to take my hands off the wheel.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm in these deep tracks and ruts. And sure enough, the truck never came out. So it would just follow no matter where went.
It would hit the wall and it would center itself.
Exactly.
Align itself, yeah.
So I was like, okay. So then I got out of the rig and kind of walking along next to it.
Yeah.
And then I grabbed an adult beverage. I'm like, I'm not drinking and driving. I'm not driving it. So I'm just kind of walking along next to it. And I got in the tracks and walked behind the rig for a while. And then I was like, I wonder if I can get the rig to pull me. And so I started looking through my stuff, and I was like, do I have anything I could like set up as a sled?
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't. So I grabbed my dad has a big old snow shovel. It's about, I don't know, just big enough for my ass to sit on, right?
Sure.
Wide enough. And so I hooked that to, it's an infinity loop.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's like a 4 foot infinity, 3 foot infinity loop. So I hooked it to that on a soft shackle, and I hooked the infinity loop to my shackle on my recovery point on the rig, and tried to have that pull me. And it didn't work too well. I had the
shovel was backwards.
Well, I had it backwards. Yeah. You have to do it that way so that it doesn't dig into the ground.
Okay.
And I did it that way so I could put my feet up. And because that's how you have to connect it to the rope, right? And through the handle of the shovel. So I could put my feet up on the handle of the shovel and just kind of lean back. And it wasn't enough to keep it from digging in. So I had to take out the infinity loop and connect the handle of the shovel straight to the recovery shackle. And that put the angle of the shovel up enough where it wouldn't dig in as it was getting dragged. And so I just kind of put my feet up on the shovel and leaned back and let my head drag in the snow behind me and took a little bit of a nap and let the rig just carry me for about, I don't know, 10 minutes.
Wow.
Dragged me for about 10 minutes. And then I was like, this is getting cold down here. So I went and got on top of the rig and laid down on top of the roof with my drink and just kind of laid up there for a while. I don't know, 10, 15 minutes.
Holy cow.
And let it just kind of keep going. So I was messed around with different things. I sat up on the hood because it was warm and leaned on the windshield for, I don't know, 5 minutes or so. but it was fun. I was probably doing that for about half an hour. I just let the rig crawl up the hill while they were breaking trail. And I just did random stuff around in the rig and never really being inside it.
Which gear were you in?
First gear.
First gear, low, low?
Yep. So I was in crawl.
Yeah.
Yeah. Two, whatever that is, 228 to one, 225 to one.
Okay. You didn't have the 4.7 engaged.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah. 4.7 plus 2.28 plus 3.8 plus the 529 gears.
Oh, okay.
So
your crawl ratio 227. Mm-hmm. Got it.
Yeah. So it was just about half an hour, just let the rig crawl while I tried to see what other fun things I could do.
And you're going like a mile an hour.
Not even. Yeah. It's in like feet per hour.
I think I figured it out once with my old setup, which is quite very similar to what you have, if not exactly what you have. In low, fifth gear, full speed, 7 miles an hour.
Really? Off, 7 miles per hour is what it is?
Off the rev limiter. Yeah. You go about 7 miles an hour.
Okay. About seven. I'm curious what it is. I'm pulling up the Grim Jeeper calculator here.
Yeah. It's a cool calculator. If nobody knows about it, it's you can calculate your ratio, your crawl ratio. You add in your transmission, your T cases, your ring and pinion, and it adds it all up for you. And it's got a lot of presets in there, so you can just say, "Oh, I've got this specific transmission," and it knows the gear.
It has all the gear ratios
for those transmissions. Yeah,
exactly.
It's a really cool website.
So let's see, and we have the Toyota R150F. We have the Toyota RF1A. Is that the... Yeah, it usually says... There we go. Underdrive is a Toyota 4.7. Gear axle ratio, 5.29s. And tire size, 39.50. So, at... Final drive ratio is crawl speed at 750 RPMs is 36 feet per minute or 0.41 miles per hour.
And then in snow, it's probably even slower
because
you're just not getting that traction.
Yep. Yeah. And then at 3000 RPMs, it goes to 1.62 miles per hour.
Can you put it into fifth gear?
Fifth gear, I could. Fifth gear is 1.85 miles per hour at 750 RPMs.
And then what about like 5,000 RPMs or 6,000?
6,000 is 14.81 miles per hour in fifth gear.
Okay.
That's funny. I was just doing that and goofing off for a while.
Yeah.
And then at the top, there's a cattle guard, a cattle crossing guard. And apparently, so Ken lives in the area. He's on the 805 repeater all the time. You can almost always reach him. His last three letters is called a QAD. He goes, yeah, there's a great little lookout up here. Once you get to the top at the cattle guard, you can get out and get to this little spot. And it's just, you can look over the entire valley.
Huh.
And I was like, interesting. I've never stopped at the cattle guard before to see what's around there. And so we went up there, and after I was done goofing off, we caught back up to them at the little lookout and got out there, and it was gorgeous. So we sat there and chatted with them for quite a while, and Chase listens to the podcast, and he knows Hussman.
Oh, does he?
Yeah. Nice. He said he was just over at Hussman's house last week, the week prior to that.
Oh, interesting.
So apparently Chase knows Hussman and he listens to the podcast. So a shout out to Chase. And then Ken was like, oh, I guess I got to start listening to the podcast now. Huh? And I was like, yes, you do, Ken. so we had a good time. Yeah. They ended up going from there and continued on down the hill, down the other side of Heartless.
To Georgetown.
To George. The Rubicon.
Oh.
To the campground.
Oh, that's the direction you were going?
Yeah. We went from Georgetown up and over towards the Rubicon.
That makes sense now that I'm thinking about it. Mm-hmm. Okay. turned around, I guess.
Yeah. So they continued on down the backside of Heartless, and we turned around from there and went home because it was starting to get dark. That was our trip on Wednesday.
Cool. And then somewhere out there you hit a puck.
We did, and that was on top of Heartless, and that was at that lookout spot.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I put that up on the patron page, I want to say Monday morning here, Sunday morning. Okay. I think it was Sunday morning when I put it up there. And
It was found
Monday, then I put it up Monday morning, because he found it like the same day.
Did he?
I put it up pretty much. I put it up on the patron page. He found it the same day. So was Joey. And I thought about it and I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, he's 10 miles from there.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
No, it was a little bit more than that. But, I was like, oh, I guess that does make sense. And he found it in the side-by-side.
Yeah.
So I made the joke. I was like, hey, did you even have to take the Tundra out or did you just drive the side-by-side from your house up there?
Yeah, he said he took the he towed the side by side, but then like within 5 miles he couldn't go any farther.
Yeah.
So he then just unloaded it.
Yeah.
So that was that was funny. And then we did have another one was that I think we said earlier.
The Mount Diablo found, yeah.
Mount Diablo.
So we have a few pucks that we've given out to people to hide for us.
Mm-hmm.
So we're hoping that these should start getting out faster and quicker. So keep an eye on the lookout. There's a post on the Patreon page. You can see that there's a post there if you're not logged into Patreon. And if you're not signed up on one of the tiers for Patreon, you can see there's a post there, but you can't see what the post says.
Okay.
You have to be signed up on one of our Patreon tiers to see the post, but that's as of right now where we're updating and laying out the pucks.
Cool.
And so I'm checkmarking the thing to notify every time I make an edit to that post. So you should get a notification about it every time we add one or anytime we update one is being found, anything like that.
Does it update people when they make a comment on that post?
I don't know if an update goes out saying that there's a new comment on the post.
But. Yeah. I think we would... One of the things I want to do and is I want to put on the website, start making a place for pucks that have been, or tokens that have been found.
Okay, yeah.
Right, so that we can try to make a little bit more interest for random people.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually it'll be if a puck, or excuse me, a token, I need to use the correct term.
Yeah.
If a token hasn't been found in 6 months,
mm-hmm.
then we'll we can start post putting it there. Them there.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Nice. I think that's a good idea. That should be very easy to set up. So yeah, that was pretty much it. I'm not quite sure what's going on. I'm having a little bit of power steering issues. Like just when my power steering system gets hot, it starts not functioning as power steering.
Interesting.
So I don't know if that means the pump is going out or what. I have a power steering cooler.
Yeah. How much fluid is in the system?
The correct amount.
Okay.
So I've noticed late in the day on Tuesday as we're bombing back down, and granted we're using the power steering quite a bit when you're going a lot quicker in the snow because you're getting pushed all over from the tracks. The power steering did not want to work until it cooled all the way back down. And then on Wednesday, same thing, late in the day as we were coming down back to Georgetown, the power steering got a warm. And then, once we got back on the highway, it was fine again.
Interesting.
So I'm guessing either my power steering pump is going out or there's something going on that it just gets hot. I don't have enough cooling in it to be able to do a high speed snow wheeling. Yeah. So we'll see. I probably won't worry too much about it until I find out with rock season, because I think that's when you put a lot of stress on the power steering system.
Yeah.
So we'll see how it goes, but I might be in the works for a new pump as well in the future. So
full hydro?
No. No, I don't think I'll ever go full hydro. We'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not on this rig.
Not on this rig, exactly.
Excellent.
Yeah, so that
sounds like it was a fun trip.
It was a fun trip. It was nice to get out and get up in some deep snow finally. And so this is the first trip that I've had the 3-4 in deep snow in 3950 IROX, and it was awesome.
It worked out well.
It worked out really well. The first Gen 4 runner was still better.
Oh.
But that's because also...
It was lighter?
It was a lot lighter, yeah. I noticed that I sunk a lot more.
So we should have cut 4 doors into that first gen.
We should have just cut 4 doors in the first gen, yeah. And then 3-4 stopped that.
Yeah.
No, but it's great being able to go any speed I want in the snow on 2 PSI, whether it's uphill or downhill or whatever, is really nice.
That's cool.
So
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like it.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Glad to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Glad to hear everything worked well and that you had a spare tire for your old man on Tuesday. So that all seemed to work out.
Yep. And then I need to figure out, I think I either just need to get a new set of tires or completely take apart all the beadlocks, take them all the way off, all the way out, take the tires all the way off the rims and duct tape the beads.
Make them a little thicker.
Make them thicker because I think they're still leaking air. They're still leaking air for sure.
And you burp them.
And I burp them on the trail, which is the big concern. I'm getting tired of burping the tires. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's going to be on my to-do list at some point.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
Well, keep us informed about that for the future.
I can do that.
Happening. Mm-hmm. I'm glad to hear that everything went well on the wheeling trips and mm-hmm. you made some new friends.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going to round us out unless you got any more updates.
That's it. I'm getting my AC fixed.
Yay.
This week.
Girl Canic.
Girl Canic's going to come over. Yeah. I'm going to pay her in Morphlate stuff.
Are you?
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. She reached out and was like, I need to get a Morphlate for my boyfriend. He wants to get in more off-roading with his Tacoma. I was like, sweet. I need some AC work done. You want to do a trade?
Yeah.
She goes, yeah. I was like, perfect.
Nice.
So that'll get fixed.
It was funny because when she was over helping me with Clifford. I made some comment about my girlfriend, you know, and whatever. And she was like, she told me, she was like, I was going to respond with, wait, you're not gay.
Yeah.
And then while she was over there working, she made a comment about her boyfriend. I'm like, wait, you're not a lesbian. And she's like, okay, thanks.
That's fair.
I appreciate that. So super funny.
That's good.
She's hilarious. She's a funny, funny girl. If you guys don't follow her on Instagram, go follow her. Girl Canic. Mm-hmm. She's a young lady in the area that went through tech school and works on people's rigs and helps them out. And
mobile mechanic. Mobile mechanic. So she'll come out mm-hmm. to you if you're in the greater Sacramento area mm-hmm. and do the work there in your driveway on the side of the street, wherever you have the rig.
Yeah. So. I had her do the AC on Clifford.
Mm-hmm.
And I just dropped Clifford off at her place and she worked on it when in her free time. And mm-hmm. then she came over to my house and helped me work on the front end of mm-hmm. Clifford on the steering because I've never dug it. It's a dual I-beam. Mm-hmm. I've never dug one of those apart. So it was kind of good to have somebody there that actually, for the most part,
knew the process,
what to do. I could tear it apart, but you know, it's nice to have somebody go, okay, now we need this step. Then
it just saves so much time. Yeah. Like,
right?
Like when you're figuring something out for the first time, exactly. You're like, yeah, you can do it, but it takes five times longer.
And having somebody that knows what they're doing. So one person can work on one side and the other person can do the other side. And your time speeds by.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a lot of fun, but she's a cool girl. A lot of fun. She has a Subaru
mm-hmm.
that she's like, done a puck lift on and has bigger tires and, you know, lifted it up. And so it's pretty fun. She's like, yeah, I go out wheeling. And I'm like, in that thing? So
yeah,
she's a cool girl.
Yeah, she is. She's a lot of fun. She did a Gear Wrench Corey's AC as well in Blanche.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So yeah. So yeah, I'll have AC again, which will be, it'll be nice
during the winter. Cool.
It is. It gets hot out in the day in the Sierras. It can get hot because you have all the snow reflecting the sunlight, right? Mm-hmm. So it gets hot in the rig sometimes. And it's nice to dry the windshield, the inside of the windshield at nighttime when it gets really cold outside. Mm-hmm. So you just run heat with the AC on. It dries the air and keeps your windshield and your windows defogged.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. That reminded me, I think I have a pro tip for people going out to King and the Hammers next year.
Yeah.
Is on your tow rigs, throw like a blanket or something over it so that all the dust and everything that's happening just falls on the blanket and your front window doesn't mm-hmm. get absolutely filthy.
Yeah, that's a good one. Cool. So yeah, that does it for today. We have a fun episode for you guys on Monday, episode 170.
Yep.
I think you guys are going to enjoy it. I had fun editing it. I will put that out there.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah,
it was a good time. So I'm jealous. I'm a little upset that you got to do that interview and I wasn't there for it, but oh well.
Yeah.
I think you guys are going to enjoy it for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll leave it at that.
Sounds good.
Cool. How can people get a hold of us if they want to give us any more feedback or tell us how we're wrong about reservoirs and shocks?
Yeah, you can reach me at me or Tyler. You can email us Jimmy or Tyler at snailtrail4x4.com. You can find me over at snailtrail4x4 on Instagram. You can find Tyler over at 4x4 Toyota Tyler. You can get a hold of Tyler at Morphlate. You can get a hold of me at Snail Armor. I think that's good enough.
Cool. Do you have any final words for everybody?
Snow wheeling.
And with that, my friends, keep crawling. So I was getting into Kermit the other day.
Yeah.
And getting ready to go somewhere. And for some reason, I couldn't figure out how the seatbelt was working. Like, it wasn't working right. And then it just clicked.
Not bad. Not bad.
Thank you. I will take it. I know you're just being sympathetic and you don't really care, but I will take it anyways.
I got one for you.
You do?
I do.
Okay.
Why don't eggs...
Hold on, hold on. Sorry, real quick. Is this a Jim, Jimmy, James, or Hydrojet joke?
this would probably be a... let's go with Jimmy.
Okay.
Why don't eggs tell jokes?
I don't know.
Because they would crack themselves up.
Yeah, that's dangerous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure, there's a Humpty Dumpty joke in there somewhere.
I'm sure there is.